Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen regn auf mein Kopf. Hink wie ein Deckel, muss es die kleine Fahre dem Kopf. Geht mir kein Sach mit.
Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, your docile, lovely host, Judy Gold. Today we have on the lovely and delightful Laura Lee Abbey. I hope you enjoy it. And I just want to say the sudden loss of Bob Saget has really affected the comedy community. And I think a lot of people, and he will be missed, and he was a bright, bright light. So take a moment to laugh today, and I hope you do right now. Enjoy.
Everyone, we are here with Laura Lee Abbey, and it is our first of 2020.
2022.
What did I say? 2020?
2020.
Oh, God.
Because it feels like the same year is on loop, right?
Yeah, all right. I'm just going to start this way. I just want to say, when I was born in 1962, I remember thinking, oh my God, in 1992, I'm going to be 30 years old. Like, I remember, oh my God, it's so far away, you know, and then in 2002, I'm going to be 40 years. I can't believe I'm going to be 60 years old this year. I feel like, Well, Elisa just turned 60. We had a huge surprise party for it. Wasn't huge because it was COVID, but it was a little surprise party for her. And I told her, and you'll probably go through this too, Laura, that she's 60 and she's way too old for me and I have to find a young girlfriend.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I hear that. It's time.
I mean, I'm in showbiz. I can't have a 60-year-old girlfriend.
No. You're going to have to go like 25 cutoff.
Yeah, because I love speaking to 25-year-olds. They have a lot to say. They have a lot
to say. So much in common.
Right. Okay, so today, everyone, Laura Lee Abbey is a writer, She's written for every major newspaper, online, magazine, Cosmo. I mean, like, you know, many, many beautiful articles. She has written a book, two books?
One book. One's an Amazon Kindle single. So
Amazon Kindle. What is that really? Whatever. Just call it a book, you goddamn son of a bitch.
It's a book. It's a fucking book.
Right. And she is married to the love of her life, Sam, whose full name is Samantha. So she's a member of our tribe. And then she has two beautiful sons. But we'll get into all this later. Let's start at the very beginning. Laura, I do a lot of research on my guests. That's what the podcast basically, it's called Kill Me Now because I hate everyone and I want to kill myself all the time, but which we'll get to at the end.
Yeah.
What makes you want to fucking kill yourself. But I'm not really allowed to say that anymore because of, I can't say that anymore, but whatever, fuck it. I love what makes people who they are, which is usually their childhood and all the things they've gone through. And so what you have done, which is fascinating to me, is you have taken your diary that you wrote in every day. Now, I just want to say, because it's the beginning of January, that I remember I had a diary when I was a little girl. I think I was maybe 10-ish. And I remember it was dated. And I remember I was waiting until my birthday's in November. I was waiting till January 1st to write my first entry. And I didn't know what to say. So and I don't know if Laura's listening. That's our producer. But I am going to admit something that I've never admitted, that I copied a little bit of Anne Frank's diary.
No.
For the first entry. Like just a little bit, like I plagiarized. It was only like two lines, but it was like, oh, today, blah, I don't even remember what it was, but it was so, I didn't even know what to say. So I was like, and like, how Jewy? That gets an extra Jew bell.
That's so Jewy.
So you've taken your diary and we're going to talk about this ad nauseum because it's fascinating to me for one reason is that I would never want to revisit my teenage years, but you have taken this and you've started this podcast called 17 and you have actors read portions of your diary and then you discuss and sort of go back. I mean, I listened to a portion where you interviewed a guy who you thought was like in love with you.
Yeah.
And you had feelings for, and you're revisiting all this as an adult, which I think is scary. For me, it would be scary. I also think it would probably give me a new perspective, and it would probably resolve a lot of recurring dreams that I have. But, I mean, that's a brilliant idea, I have to say.
I wish I could take full credit for the idea. There's a French version of the podcast, yes, that was really popular over in France.
Right.
So I'm excited to kind of recreate it here for an English speaking audience. And yeah, you know, I think after college, I tried to start a blog that was like when everyone was blogging, where I would revisit these journal entries from when I was just share journal entries from when I was a teenager. And I think I was still too young and too close to them. And now, you know, I'm 36. I have two kids. My life is just like, it's exhausting. It's just what? Parenting. It's parenting, right? So there's like a real lack of urgency that is in like every entry when you're a teenager. Everything is so loaded, every experience. And like, you're waiting for your life to begin. And so you're acting like none of this is a big deal because it's not even your real life. But at the same time, it's all just shaping who you are. Right. So all of these experiences are so big. So I think it's so intense to put it out into the world and to share it. And
I mean, as a comic, that's what I do, period.
Right. You share your shit. So
right. But it's like, this is like, you know, I cloak it in humor. But I mean, you grew up, let's just say you grew up in Setauket. Is that right?
Yeah, very close. Setauket. You got it.
Setauket, New York, which is in Long Island.
Long Island. I'm an islander.
I can't find anything about your siblings. I fucking looked everywhere.
Yeah, my family, we're just like boring, regular people. Everyone's really impressed that I'm just like airing all of our laundry all the time.
Yeah, that's good though.
I
know, but you need one person to do it. So how many siblings do you have?
I'm the youngest of three. I have that, a brother,
me too.
And a sister. Nice.
Me too.
Yes. And it's great.
And you have parents.
Parents. What mom and dad.
What are their names? Because I couldn't find that anywhere. First of all, even in your New York Times wedding thing, it doesn't have your parents' names.
Really? Okay, so we had a wedding announcement that should have their names.
Right.
Andrew and
Irene.
Andrew and?
Irene. I love Irene! You know what? Let me tell you something. Elisa has this, one of her best friends' name is Irene, and we call her Tango Irene. From Rent, it's Tango Maureen, and so we call her Tango, or whatever, go ahead.
Now that's in my head. Yeah, my mom's like Massapequa, Long Island, like thick Long Island accent, Irene. It's really good. It's good stuff.
And what did they do? I never have to ask this. I can usually figure it out, but I couldn't fucking figure it out.
What did they do? My dad worked for Estee Lauder my whole life, so I always had
fabulous
makeup and skincare. My mom worked for Clinique for a while. Uh-huh. She worked at the local grocery store for a while. She's all over the place.
So you had this normal Long Island.
So normal. Painfully normal.
Grammar school, like growing up.
Yeah, so we did, when I was four, we moved to Canada for 6 years.
Oh, that's right. For 6 years, you moved to Ontario.
Ontario.
And you have dual citizenship, correct?
I'm a dual citizen, yeah.
You know what? I'm a little jealous.
Which I was like, Mom, if I wanted to like move to Canada, do I even have a citizenship card somewhere? I don't know.
Do you understand how lucky you are that you have that?
I like that my parents like knew way back when, even though we're only living here for a few years, like we're going to make our kids dual citizens because this is a smart move.
How come you moved to Canada?
My dad's job. He was moved. There was a plant, an Estee Lauder plant up there. I'm butchering this. I hope he's not going to listen because it all wrong.
Just for his job. So you moved there.
Just for work. Yeah.
Do you remember being in Canada and them all having like talking a little weird? And your mother has this fucking thick Long Island accent.
Could not get enough of her there. They would just make her say like, say coffee again, say dog. they thought she was the greatest. I was little, I was four. So I didn't sound like anything, but when we actually moved back to New York, they made fun of me a little bit because I had that proper Canadian
right.
Speech.
You know how they sort of like have an up thing at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, and I can't, you know, at the end of the sentence, it's like, I don't know. Did they don't speak French there?
They do.
They do?
We all had to learn French in school, but they spoke, you know, in Ontario.
Do you remember French?
Yes. I was in French through high school and then I lost it all, you know, in college and after.
I know.
That.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. It's so bad.
It's
that
so
we
annoying.
All let that happen.
I know. I had 6 years of Spanish and then.
Gone.
Yeah. And then, I can't even talk whatever. Okay. So you go to Canada. Everything's normal. Was there a difference between Canadian school? Do you remember coming back? So when you came back, you were 10, right?
I was thrown to the wolves. Yeah. It was going from Canada. I was in this nice Catholic school. Everyone knew everyone. We lived in these developments where all the houses were just like the same size.
Right.
You just rode your bike everywhere. And then I moved to this kind of like a wealthier town on Long Island and the kids are
spoiled.
Intense,
yes.
And they're so much more mature. And they they were just... I went from being a kid to, you know, I entered fifth grade on Long Island.
I know. So that's like,
we're acting like adults. Yeah.
Right. So you're going to like middle school, you're thrown, which is the worst fucking time of your life.
It was not cute. Yeah.
Do you still have friends from when you were in Canada?
I keep in touch with a couple people. Yeah. Kind of. So yeah. Cute. We message each other and we chat about stuff. And right. there's one, she's always like, what's going on? Is the U.S. really as scary as it sounds right now? I'm like, yes, it is.
Oh, don't my God. It's here. So scary. I know you're whatever. I'm jealous.
Hey, everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it, and it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV, and I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
So you then go into middle school. I don't know if you know that I'm 6'2".
I do, I'm 5'11".
I know! That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. But I'm shrinking. I have to get my knee replaced. So I had the surgery on the books and then I had to fucking change it, which
oh,
sucks.
No.
I know. And I just want to get it over with. And then I'm going to come to your fucking studio and you're going to fucking work me out. All
you
right. Anyway,
you
were in the Key Club, which I never understood. I read that you were in the Key Club. I was in the band. We have something in common besides being really tall is that when I was in seventh grade, I was probably about 5'9". I was already taller than the teachers and a lot of my friends' parents. Not that I had a bunch of friends, but the people at synagogue were like, oh, this is a tall fan. Anyway, and I tried out for the basketball team. And this is a real story. And the coach told me that I was too tall. And it wouldn't be fair to the other players.
Do you feel like that was a load of bullshit?
This is what happened, Laura Lee, Abby. Those things that happen to you at that age stay with you for the rest of your fucking life, right?
They do.
And I had a lot of rejection growing up. That's why, you know, I'm a comedian. Because I like to let it keep it going. But anyway.
Yeah, of course.
I do think it was a lot of bullshit. There was a bit of anti-Semitism in our, even though there were a lot of Jewish kids, there were sort of, I don't know if this guy was anti-Semitic, but there were anti-Semitic teachers and stuff. But yeah, so he told me I was too tall. And then many years later, on Facecock, which I fucking hate. The one of the teachers or coaches, like the football coach or something from our school, you know, was friending me. It's like, you are like redoing your fucking high school years. And I'm like, get the fuck away from me. And so one of the coaches, I said, he said something to me and I said, you know, cause you met, I remember, it, you know, Wayne Carrick, his name was.
Oh, I'm out.
And he said, you know, you're too tall for the team. By the time I was 13, I was 6 feet tall. So fuck him. And, he said, this guy said, this football coach said, he really regrets that. And I'm like, I'm 50, what, eight at this point, seven, five, 55. You know, he regrets it. Fuck him.
Yeah, that's his shit. Don't make me deal with that.
And he never said, you know, I'm sorry. But that shit stays with you for the rest of your life. Cut to my son, Ben, plays basketball in college. Okay, he plays college basketball. He was D1. He just moved to D3 because he hated D1. But anyway.
Well, I've never had any athletic prowess whatsoever. And it's hard. And you know this being a tall girl growing up because I went to
everyone.
High school. Every male teacher was like, are you trying out for basketball? What do you play? I'm like, I play nothing. I'm bad at all the things. Back off.
Right. I'm a little uncoordinated, but I'm really not because I play tennis and I would take my kids to play. We had a basketball court in our driveway, so I played all the time. But, with proper training, I think I would have excelled. I'm very athletic, but that was it. That was the end of it. That was the end. And same thing, high school. Oh, and even the girls who were on the basketball team are like, what the fuck are you doing, Judy? You go to be, you know, we need you, Judy. And I was like, I don't know. I just, it's like something that says, so you tried out. Can you tell the story?
Oh God.
Where you tried out for the volleyball. Well, you really wanted to play volleyball.
Really wanted to play volleyball. I had never, you know, besides gym class, I'd never had any train. Like I didn't really know how to play volleyball. So,
right.
But my school, the girls' volleyball team was a big deal. Like they won. I don't know. I'm going to prove how little I know about sports. They were great. And so it was really hard to get on that team. And yeah, so I tried out and I went through all these intense days of tryouts. And there was this one like assistant coach who was like, he was really nice to me and he was really helping me out. So I was like, okay, maybe being tall, he's going to see something in me and know
right.
I can learn and I can improve. And, I didn't make the team and I was so upset as you would be. I was disappointed. And so I know what you want me to tell is how my mom couldn't bear to see her child upset and just had to step in. And this is ninth grade. How old was I? Like, how old are you in ninth grade? 14, 15?
You're 14. Yeah.
14. And I want her to like stay the F out of my life. And instead she calls the coach and is like, Laura put off foot surgery because she wanted to try out for the team. She's so devastated. Can't you, oh my God, I can't even believe I'm telling you this. Can't you, you know, give her a spot or have her train with the girls and maybe she'll improve. And I had no idea any of this, that she did this. And so after school one day, there's an announcement that like, I have to go to the gym and it's the coach and all the girls.
Wait, is this an announcement? I don't think kids realize that there was a PA system.
Like a PA.
Where the entire school will hear like, Judith Gold, please report to blank. Everyone correct. In the fucking school. Yeah.
Correct. So now everyone has heard me and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then you get this little spark of like, what's happening? And he calls me into his office and all the volleyball girls are there and they're just kind of eyeing me. And he just so awkwardly, he's like a middle-aged man. I'm a teenage girl.
Right.
Is telling me how he heard that I put off this foot surgery and maybe I can train with the team, kind of be, what is it, like the ball boy or something, you know, like the team manager or something like that.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I immediately know what's going on. I'm horrified. I am just burning inside.
Right. Because you had no idea that your mother did this.
And now, like the second he starts talking to me, I know who.
Right.
who made this happen? And the girls are all just staring at me and it is so awkward. And I want to crawl into a hole and die. And I was like, let me think about it. I got the hell out of there. Never returned again. Just, and like, I remember being so mad at my mom, but also she was just such an emotional, like, right. I just wanted to help. And you were so sad. And I was like, I can't even be mad at you. You're not even letting me be mad at you for doing this stupid, horrific thing to humiliate me. And so
she didn't know she was going to humiliate you.
I mean, come on, stay out of, but I mean, that was a big lesson for me now that I mean, I have little kids, but
I know, I was just thinking,
I'm going to have to stay out of their shit.
I know. And you're going to want to intervene.
I'm going to want to so bad.
My mother was the same way. I'm sure I've told this story, but when I was doing one of my off Broadway shows, one person show, I got this great review. Rave in the New York Times, but my hometown paper in New Jersey did not give me a good review. What? And I was at a photo shoot and the PR person came over and was like, Judy, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, what? Apparently your mother called the reviewer of the Star Ledger and left a voice. This is before cell phones and stuff, and left a voicemail and he's not calling her back. He's not calling her back. She can't call reviewers if they give you a bad review. So I called my mother and I said, Ma, you know, you can't call reviewers if they give me a bad review. That's their thing. Well, let me tell you something. At the end of his review, it says, if you have any questions or comments, you can call me at, you know, and it gave his phone number. And, you know, I had to listen to his opinion. And he can listen to mine. And if he doesn't want people calling him, he shouldn't put his phone. And I was like, how can you fucking argue with that?
You can't. You cannot.
You can't argue with that. And it comes from fucking love. And I told this at her funeral. Because it is my favorite. It so encapsulates that your kid is not going to be hurt by, you know, you can be hurt by me, but you're not going to be hurt. Yeah.
Right.
So you walked around high school like I did. Like the thing, I don't think people realize being a tall girl, it really has such a profound effect on your personality because you can't hide. You can't, you know, what's that thing where you in the woodwork, you can't fade into the, I don't know, I can't think because I've already been through menopause, but you can't fade into the woodwork. Like you know. And I don't know if this happens to you. I walk in an elevator and people are like looking at my feet to see if I'm wearing like 7-inch heels. But now I have a 6'7.5-inch son who, you know, I'm like, ooh, you know, it's, you wait till you see, do you think your sons will be really tall?
I don't know. I mean, I hope. I gave birth to one of them. So the other is on his own. He might be a shorty like my wife, but.
Yeah, because.
I'm hoping.
I want you to know that basketball coaches ask how tall the mother is.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That they said, they always say, how tall is your mother? Which is great for a kid with two moms. Anyway, but seeing my son grow up as the tallest kid, athletic, funny, you know. It was a completely different, you know,
well, height is celebrated for guys.
Right.
And for women, we're just kind of, especially in this country, we're taught to just like close up and be quiet and demure. And so when you're a really tall girl, you already off the bat feel like you're taking up too much space in the world. And I'm a loud mouth. And
same.
You're a loud mouth. And so you know, I remember being like, oh, I'm too much for always feeling I was too much. I can't be this tall. I can't be this opinionated. And it's tough, especially in adolescence, to come to terms with that. And, you know, you eventually reach an age where I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I am too much. Maybe I'm not for you. So what?
But it's also like people think, I don't know if you went through this, but people thought I was older than I was.
Yeah. Which is fun until you are older and then you're like, damn it.
Right. Because I remember when I was like, you know, they used to have kids prices for the movies. And I would go and they'd be like, you're not 12. And I'm like, I swear. And my mother was like, yeah, I'm getting a copy of your birth certificate. and you're gonna go to the movie theater. And I'm like, Mom, I'm not going to the movie theater with my birth certificate. It's already fucking embarrassing. But yeah, people treat you differently as if you have, you're not as sensitive,
right?
You're not as, you know, you have, you're tougher. But also this idea that that is the first thing people see. That is the first thing people comment about. And it's so crazy. Like if someone is obese, you don't say, oh, wow, you're obese. You're fat. You know, like, you're tall. It's like, oh, you're hairy. No, it's so, I don't know. It's just, it's such a weird thing that sort of definitely.
That people just get to comment on and have an opinion on openly to your face all the time. Yeah.
Do people still say stuff to you? People say stuff to me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny when I get off stage and people are like, oh, I didn't realize you were that tall. Like, really?
Yeah.
You didn't realize I was that tall. Mm. I, you know, the guy on before me came up to my fucking left hip. What size shoe were you?
10.
I don't feel sorry for you. Okay. I'm a 12 and a half.
Oh, I do have I have a friend who's 5'4 and she's a size 10. So
no way. What the fuck is that?
That's rough for her. That's not fair.
That's not good. Does she look like, you know, weird?
She looks gorgeous and perfect.
Oh, right. I don't know why. That's horrible.
Yeah. So as much as I hate, I only hate having a big foot because sometimes it's hard to find shoes.
Hello? I'm a 12 and a half. Okay.
No.
Yes.
That's real hard.
That's right. Well, so
all I wear now are like sneakers and boots. So who cares?
Yeah. Same. Now your friend who's 5'4 and has a 10. All right. This is going to be the most immature joke ever. I'm just doing a warning. So your friend who's 5'4 and has a size 10 shoe, does she have a large penis? Good night, folks. Okay. Okay.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with One Skin. You're welcome.
You graduate high school, but everything's normal in high school, except we're going to go back to that because that's what the podcast is.
Yes.
And you go to the college that I really wanted to go to and my parents wouldn't let me go to.
Oh, why not?
Because when I went to college in 1980, Rutgers, where was my is my state school, was $2,500 a semester.
Mm, there you go.
And they were like, you know, if you want to go to graduate school, fine. But and I was like, I have to go to Emerson. I don't even know why I wanted to go to Emerson College, but
that's how
I
felt. I was like, I have to go there. They're going to get me there.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, and it wasn't even it wasn't what it is today, you know. But a lot of comics entered. I would have had a whole different experience. But so you went to Emerson, and you're feeling a little lonely at a place, whatever. And you join a sorority.
Yeah. So I always kind of like a little asterisk, like at Emerson, joining a sorority wasn't like joining a sorority at any other school because Emerson College, when I went there, and I love this about Emerson, it's just like, you know, the joke was gay by May or your money back. Like guys went there with girlfriends and then, you know, they came out. And so it was just like gay musical theater and so many weird kids, which I loved. I was a weird kid, but also sometimes I just wanted to get drunk and like go make out with boys at parties. And so I was like, who am I doing that with? And so there was a sorority and that was kind of the answer to that.
So you like, it's interesting you say that you had like this normal childhood upbringing, didn't even think you were gay at all. And you end up like, don't you think it's weird that you picked that school?
Yes.
Not having any consciousness of, oh, this is the place, you know, like, why do I want to go to the school with all these oddballs?
I think I wanted, you know, I wanted a gay best friend and wanted the artsy experience. I wanted to be something I wasn't. I'm not, you know, I don't belong in academia or any of that. So,
But you were in the Key Club. What is the fucking Key Club? It's the Kiwanis Club. And first of all, they didn't even allow women until 1987. So,
really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was co-president of Key Club in high school with Jess Auerkirk. Shout out to her. We basically did philanthropy.
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah.
That's what we did. Yeah. And we would have to go to the like monthly Kiwanis meetings where we would have to go have dinner at some local restaurant.
Kiwanis Club.
It was so awkward. Yeah, it was weird. But they were...
Were you in any other clubs?
I was on yearbook only because I wanted to make sure pictures of my friends and I got in.
Right. But
yeah, no, I didn't. I was in Key Club and I hung out with my friends and I worked a lot because I had a fun job. And
What'd you do? What was your job?
I worked at a country club. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. It was a tennis and beach club and they did a lot of weddings and it was, you know, the wealthier community over by the water. And we just got into a lot of shenanigans over there because there was so much alcohol and just had a good time.
Oh my God. I love that. We're going to talk about that. So anyway, you get into your, I didn't even know Emerson had sororities. You joined the sorority.
What was the name of the sorority? I was rejected.
Why?
Yeah. I rushed and did not make it in, but because I just rushed again.
So it's volleyball revisited.
I have no shame. Apparently I had no dignity. I just keep going back.
How do you not get in? Like, that's so fucking horrible.
Fuck those girls. I'm awesome. I don't know what their problem was.
What does it mean to rush? Like, I know my older son was in a fraternity and I heard stories that I really wish I had never heard.
Not like
secret shit, but like, you know, just the shit they did, you know, he's like, I'm rushing. I got to go clean the whole house out. And I'm like, I got to drive this kid to his, and I'm like, you're supposed to be in school. You're not like a fucking servant. Yeah.
It was so stupid. I look back and I'm like, why did we let them treat us that way? This is ridiculous. So rush is basically just a week of, they throw parties. Like, you know, everyone in college loves to throw a wine and cheese party. Like we're fucking adults. Lots of wine and cheese
but it's shitty wine and shitty cheese.
And you just get to know the sisters. And then if they want you, they give you a bid. in this secret ceremony. Oh, and then you become a pledge.
Right.
So I didn't get a bid my first semester, but my new best friend at school and another couple of friends got bids. So they pledged that semester. And so the next semester they were like, you should rush again. You'll definitely get a bid this time. And so I did.
And you did it. And you feel, oh my God, this is what I love. I like hanging out with all these girls and talking, and you meet this girl, Samantha.
Yes. So I don't know how much of this I'm allowed. I always feel bad when I tell these stories because she's not here to defend herself because she was a little shit when I met her. So my first semester of my sophomore year, she showed up at, I was a sister by then. So I thought I was so cool. And she showed up at the first rush meeting of the year.
And you were her big sister.
I became her big sister. Yeah, I did, by accident, I think. She just kind of turned my world upside down.
So the way you describe it in a lot of your articles is that, which I love, it's like you're uncomfortable. Like you can't make eye contact because it's too intense. You're like, it's so hard for you. Like you want to be around her, but she makes you crazy. And you're having all these feelings that you never had.
Never had. And honestly, you know, I feel bad for people who live their whole life closeted, but at least they know they're feeling that way. For me, those feelings came out of nowhere and I didn't know what the hell to do with them.
How is, like, as someone who, like, I knew when I was like 3, you know, I was like, what's going on? You know? Yeah. And the struggle that horrible struggle through, you know, in adolescence, you realize, oh, and then high school, you're like, oh my God. And, you know, I'm talking about the late, I went to high school in 1976. So No, you could not even, never tell anyone, like, horrible, you know, people didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
There was no representation on television, you know, up until the AIDS crisis. People really,
it was just hush hush.
Yeah, it was very hush hush. So here you are, not even entertaining the thought that you might be a lesbian, you know? And you see it, you see this person, and boom.
Yeah. It was, and it's funny too, because, you know, I look back, I'm like, oh my God, why was this so tumultuous for you? But obviously it was. I was young, these were new feelings. And even at Emerson, I was in this sorority. It was just like straight girls, boy crazy. And I grew up in this just like white, straight, heteronormative town. My high school, I went to a huge high school. I could maybe knew one or two gay people, you know, and they were always the stereotypical gay guy who,
right,
you know, got like the kids made fun of him, but he had his girlfriends who hung around him.
Right.
And so this was just not on my radar, didn't know what to do with it. And it was one of those things where I was like, if I do this, can you ever take it back? Like, I didn't know. And I was, didn't know how to label it, didn't know what to do with it. It took me years and years and years until I finally was like, oh, I'm bisexual. This is great. I'm allowed to be attracted to whoever the fuck I want. But back then it just didn't feel that way. Cause I was like, I've never liked another girl. I don't know if I ever will. Why is this person affecting me in this way? And what do I do about it? And it was terrifying and I wouldn't tell anybody. So
of course,
a lot of lying and
isn't, and shame. And it's also like the fact that this is what, 20?
It's like 2004.
Four. So this is like 25 years after I'm dealing with it. And there's still that I can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And you just know. It's not even that someone says, don't ever tell anyone. It's that you just know.
You feel it. Yeah.
Right.
And even, you know, the early 2000s, I get into a lot of this in the podcast. It was really misogynistic time. Like the movies, everything was bullshit. There was so much homophobia. As much as it's like, oh, we've come a long way, we still hadn't. It still wasn't, you know, there still weren't a lot of queer characters in movies and on TV that were represented well.
Oh my God. It was always
a joke.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, I came out on stage in 96 and because that was when my son was born, I came out as a gay parent. Cause I was like, I'm a comic and and it definitely had an effect on my career, but I don't fucking care. I don't give a shit. So, you know, imagine how you felt. And I'm on stage. Like, I'm doing TV and saying I'm a lesbian and I'm talking about my gay family. And I, you know, if you really think about it, 2015 is when we really gained, you know, equality federally. That's not even 6 years ago.
I know. It's, I know. I was married in 2013. And right. I'm like, oh, that wasn't even, our marriage wasn't even federally recognized. Like,
and before that, like in the late 90s, I remember when Henry went to kindergarten and the forms in school were like mother, father, mother, father.
They're still that way. It's so infuriating.
Not in New York City.
Forms.
No, you have to. You have to fight for it. I. What's her name? Christine Quinn helped me. She was the Speaker of the House. And I said, "What? You know, you got to put and especially after 2001. You know, you can't put mother, father. Sorry." People lost their parents, and people have different family structures.
Parent, guardian one, parent, guardian two. This is very easy.
That's it, yeah. You need to fight for that right now.
Yep.
Every time you encounter that, every time at a doctor's office.
Oh, I always cross out like father at the doctor's office. I write donor. That's a big one. People using dad or father. I'm like, words donor, very easy.
Yes. Word. I'm sending you this article I wrote when Ben got his tonsils out that they now use for doctors treating, you know, children of gays.
Not to jump off into a different direction, but my oldest son had open heart surgery when he was two, and the staff at the hospital were all great. And then this random woman came to walk my wife and I into the ER, and she gets my wife like in her hat and her suit and the mask and the whole thing. And she's just ignoring me. And I'm like, can I have one of those? And then my wife's hysterical because she always gets to be the hysterical one putting our son into surgery. And this woman's like elbowing me out of the way. And I'm like, I'm his fucking biological mother, first of all, but we are both like, what? It was on top of the fact that my baby was having fucking open heart surgery. It was so insane that I was being treated this way. And I was just like, this is, everyone else here knows that we are his moms and you are just elbowing me out. Like I'm her random friend that she brought into the OR. Like,
right. I know that's, you know, I've told this story before, but when Sharon, my ex, gave birth, it was a emergency C. And when we got to the hospital, the nurse and the delivery nurse recognized me and said, and this is 96, and gave me a thing on my wrist. And it's like, I'm going to take care of you because it's not going to be easy. Mm. And she sort of, thank God, Alice Feely, I love you. She's the one who made sure I was there. I was there during the C, but there were like, who's this? Who is this? Why are you here? And the fact that that still happens 20 plus years later is, it is not acceptable. Okay. No. So let's go back.
Let's go back.
So you know, you're in love. You have two sons. You married your sorority sister, which is probably so many guys jerking off to this like, oh, yeah, they were sorority sisters in the village. And, you know, you both had, you know, through your relationship, broken up, let's just tell the folks listening that you never came out. You came out to your mother because you were so upset about your relationship had been broken up, was one of the times you broke up, and you were on the porch and you were like, I just have to tell you.
And I left her and she broke my heart.
Right. And your mother was like, oh, I think I'll call the volleyball coach. No, what did she? I can't believe she didn't call her and was like, you take her back. No, but that was how you told your mother.
Yeah. I always wrote in my journals. I didn't talk to my parents about anything ever growing up. And so I called my parents Sam and I, our whole relationship, it was like a sorority lesbian love triangle. Like there was shit going on and I was just, I felt insane. You know, I just felt completely insane. So it was like heartbreak on top of, am I gay? On top of the girl I'm in love with just hooked up with my friends. Like, is everybody alive? It was a mess. And so I remember calling my parents and being like, I need to come home. I think I need therapy. Like, I just have too much shit going on. And so I went home that weekend and so they were just kind of waiting for me to tell them like, what you know, just like, what's going on with you? And so I sat out on the front porch with my mom and just kind of gave her the basics of what had happened. And she was very supportive, you know, hugged me and let me just cry. But I know that she was freaking out.
Right.
Freaking out. And then I didn't really talk to my dad about it. I was like, she'll handle that.
Right.
And they paid for me to go to therapy and off I went back to school.
So you didn't
really talk too much about it.
You went to therapy in Boston, right?
Yeah, I found a great therapist. She was wonderful.
Why wouldn't I go? Like, I wish I went to a sorority and there was a triangle of lesbian love.
Yeah, except when you're the one that feels like you're getting
hurt. I know. Yeah.
Sam was just having a great time, you know, hooking up with all the girls.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Laura Lee Abbey. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast, nor my life, would not be possible without the help, love, and dedication of Brittany Jo Sowards. If you have not subscribed or left a review, you're a fucking asshole. So please go do it. It helps more people find the podcast. 5 stars. I'm just letting you know, my Uber rating is definitely going up because I'm being really nice in the Ubers. So 5 stars means a lot. But I do get shitty cars a lot of the time because I think I have a shitty rating. But it's getting better. Anyway, if you haven't purchased my book, Yes, I Can Say That, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble, You're an Idiot, because you're listening to my podcast, you should read my book. You know what I'm saying? Also, I am now on TikTok. Yes, I'm on TikTok because I caved and my kids told me I had to. So I'm on TikTok. So check me out on TikTok. It's like my other, it's the same, whatever name, at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. Same name as, you know, what are they called? The Twitter, the Instagram. And I'm Jewish, and that's why it's JWDY. God, I'm funny. Tuesday, January 19th, I will be at Gotham Comedy Club at Homo Comicus, which, as you can imagine, is a show for the gays and gay lovers and homos and their people. Check that out if you're in the New York City area and you're not afraid to go out. Also, I just want to say, I can't wait till this fucking COVID shit is over. I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. So please, if you're not boosted, get fucking boosted. If you are like an asshole non-masker, I mean, if you're any of those things, I'm sure you're not listening to this podcast, but just wear a mask. Don't be like, oh, I don't have to wear a mask. And don't wear a cloth mask. Wear the fucking, you know, KN95, N95, N59, whatever. If it has a number on it and an N, wear it. And I think that's it. I can't believe you're still listening. Whoever's still listening, I love you so much. I can't even tell you. And that's it. I hope you have a great week. And as we always say, so long!